When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
For all the latest betting markets, odds and promotions, visit williamhill.com. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly. William Hill. It's who you play with.
Hello and welcome to Middle Please Umpire. I am Miles Jupp, and with me is, of course, World Cup winning fast bowler and sex pot, Mark Wood. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Miles. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm in a slightly noisy kitchen, but as I've discovered whilst attempting to homeschool during lockdown, there is literally nothing I can do about it.
The thing is, Miles, nothing will dampen my spirits. It's a big
nothing.
Day today.
It is a very big day. Tell us why it's a big day, Mark.
I've turned the ripe old age of 31. It's my birthday.
31. Birthday. Well, many happy returns, Mark. You're wearing it remarkably well. I actually knew it was your birthday, Mark, because last night I was just sitting by the fire. I thought I'm going to get the good book down. And so I got the good book down, and I was reading a passage in it that really leapt out at me. It's from one of the Gospels. I'll read it to you now. Of course, this will be familiar to anyone from studies at school. On the 11th of January 1990, in the lush fields around the Rohan Canai, brackets of J.D. Weatherspoon's pub in Ashington, Northumberland, there were some shepherds, basically, young lads looking for trouble, keeping watch. Just then, an angel of the Minor Counties Championship Eastern Division appeared before them, and they were sore afraid, or so afraid, as it's pronounced in the South. But the angel of the Minor Counties Championship Eastern Division said, "Do not be afraid, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Today, in Ashington, just west of the A189 and bordered to the south by the River Warbeck..." We know where Ashington is, says the lads. We live here. I'm just setting it in a wider geographical context for a wider audience, explained the angel testily. Anyway, as I was saying, today in Ashington, a boy is born. He looks like an owl, but pretends to have a horse. He won't be particularly tall or stocky, but by crikey, he's going to push it through quick. He's not got an especially high arm. I guess you call him Slingy. Or Skitty, perhaps. But he will play for Northumberland, then Durham, then England. He will go on to win the Cricket World Cup. He'll probably do an intercostal diving unsuccessfully for a second, but at least scores will be level. And he won't have to field in the Super over. It's win-win, basically. And they shall call him Mark. Right now, he's wrapped in swaddling clothes and trying to master whistling. And suddenly, there appeared with the angel a great multitude, praising and singing Sweet Caroline, oh, 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 good times never felt so good. Which led me, of course, to say happy birthday, Mark Wood. It's interesting,
you,
I must have read that book
I've
read that book so many times, and I must have just skipped that paragraph.
And here I am in Sri Lanka now with the more apt gospel. Little donkey on a dusty road. It's been quite funny here, actually, because you think of Sri Lanka as being literally red hot, but it's been thunderstorms sort of every day, so we haven't actually seen the sun very much. But when it does get out, it always seems to come out when I bowl for some reason. I don't know if someone's tormenting me or if they have a voodoo doll of me that keeps prodding me in the ankle and then hoying me out in the sun. But that seems to the sun at 95% humidity seems to just come out when I bowl. So So at the minute, I'm hoping that changes, but we haven't had the conditions that we thought we would. The practice match was good. It was nice to blow off a few cobwebs and things, but I think it's just more... Our sport of the ball has quite a lot, and your fifth and sixth ball are particularly difficult because you're so sapped going into the last couple of balls of the over that they're often your most either inaccurate or your thought process is a bit muddled because you're then thinking, oh, I'll try something different when you should just be doing the same thing. So we're trying to work as a unit to obviously reverse swing, but you're sweating so much, so that's a challenge. Well, I was bowling with Jack Leach at the time, and he was rattling through his overs to the point where I was like, Jack, can you please slow down? But I had to change fielding positions to somewhere where the ball wasn't going to go because I was fielding a deep point to Jack Leach, and they were sort of knocking a couple there as well for one. So I was never sort of stopping. So when I was coming back on for my over, I was a bit knackered, but I think that's gonna be the challenge here. I mean, I felt good. I didn't get any wickets, but I created a couple of chances, bowled a couple of spells that, you know, the captain would want us to bowl. So I tell you, actually, what has been one of the highlights, Miles, is seeing cows in the middle of the road on every journey. Of course, in England, they're penned in a field, but here they sort of just run free, and there's a massive effort from the bus driver to go around the cows, obviously. But it seems like the cows rule the road here.
Do they, I mean, officially, do they have priority? Do you think if you're having driving lessons in Sri Lanka, like on the theory bit, there's a picture of a cow and it says, what pedal do you hit when you see one of these?
I think it's often in the theory test of what happens if you see a cow. And the obvious answer would be go around it or toot your horn, which seems to be a common. But I think if I was the cow and I was being tooted at so often, I'd either think that I was either a pretty good looking cow or I would start to slowly go crazy.
What else is bringing you joy then? You're hardly leaving the hotel.
It's been a little bit of Football Manager in my room, a bit of watching some movies and some series.
What are you watching at the minute?
What's the story, Balamori? Wouldn't you like to know?
How many of the 253 episodes have you seen?
I'm just new to it at the minute.
There's one when I build a time machine, which I think you in particular will love, with your love of history. Who's your favourite character in it?
Well, you obviously.
No, you don't have to say me. Who's your? I'm very flattered.
How could we be friends and you're not my favourite character?
Well, because that's not... I'm afraid
are
that's...
Are you trying to say I'm not your favourite cricketer?
No, that is... Oh, well, I'm glad you brought it up first. No,
I know Michael Atherton's your number one. I'm happy to be your number two. It makes me happy to be number two.
Do you know what there is in that programme? When they were doing the set, they said, is there anything you want on the set? And one of the things, if you watch that closely, and I'm not recommending necessarily that you do or don't, but on the set behind Archie the Inventor is a little framed photograph of Michael Atherton.
And in every episode, do you mention back and across?
Back and across, that's right, yeah.
Watch out for McGrath.
Watch.
in all seriousness, I think the series I've been watching The Boys, which is very good. I finished the Queen's Gambit, the chess one. And then we're spoiled for choice on the TV with cricket, obviously being in this part of the world with cricket being so highly thought of. I've watched that much of had the cricket in the background, and I know the adverts and the theme song for the cricket. There's the Big Bash, there's the Australian Tests.
Have you watched any Big Bash? There's a lot of English players do very well in the Big Bash.
Yes, I'm really pleased for all the lads. You always want the English lads to do well. I've got a little bit of a soft spot for Brisbane Heat because I played on the Gold Coast for 3 years and went to watch them play a couple of times. So I follow them closely. I've had a message from Joe Hart on Instagram, which was lovely.
Oh,
our
yeah.
Joe, as I like to call him now. Our War Joe. It was nice to speak to him. Finally, the greatest birthday present that I got was Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is one of my favourite shows. Boyle, the character called Boyle, who is the main character, sort of sidekick. Joe Latruglio, is his real name. He sent me a personalised message and I literally couldn't believe it. He mentioned Jaffas and hitting lengths.
Really?
Which he admitted he just Googled. But that was Jimmy Anderson got me that present.
That's a very nice gift.
We're both huge fans of the show, so that was a lovely gift.
Have you got my present yet?
No, but a fun fact for all you listeners out there, my birthday coincides with my dad's. We're both born on the same day. Another fun fact, it's the same day as Brian Robson. So I'd like to think that I am also a tenacious midfielder. And finally, it's the same day as Rahul Dravid, who obviously picked up his batting tips from me.
I don't want to be a spoiler, but what I've sent you, you'll have to sign for it. I had to write on it what it was, otherwise I wasn't allowed to use International Post. Anyway, if you're worried about the evenings getting boring, Mark, worry no more, because it's a VHS of Archie's greatest inventions from the Balamory days. And it's still
with Michael Atherton, obviously, in the background.
That's right. And it's actually still got a Woolworths price tag on. I have got sports bags and sports bags of the thing, so I'm just slowly getting rid of them. I mean, the dream is they get lost in transit because I don't put quite enough postage on. Shall we have a look at our post bag, Mark?
Yes, please.
It's not like a real post bag. It's a sort of an e-bag, isn't it? So there's various questions that Mark's been asking over the course of the series. That noise there, that is me pressing the buttons on my laptop in real time.
A good TMS reporter. You've just set the real picture there.
I'm painting
the picture with your words.
That's right. I just want people to just get a real sense of what it's like hosting a podcast with Mark Wood. It is. I don't want people to forget the admin side. You've been asking about teas, nicknames, legendary stories. Let's have a look. Okay, so this first one, this is about teas. This is sent in by AJ. I can vouch for the teas at Old Merchant Taylor's. They even managed to destroy the opposition on one occasion, or at least the lack of them did. We were hosting High Wycombe, who included two former Test players in their ranks, and tea was called after we'd hit 270-odd. Our home ground has a number of rooms in the old house where tea is served. Unfortunately, the visiting skipper had led his team to the wrong one. After waiting a while, they realised the error and eventually found the correct place. However, our lads and the umpires hadn't really noticed the opposition's absence and had filled their boots with a hearty tea. By the time they arrived, there was probably only the corned beef sandwiches and a few pork pies left. Probably the runt of the litter, to be fair. There were some angry scenes at the remaining choice and even a chair kicked as we scrambled to find some more to eat. With their heads gone at the lack of a coronation chicken option, they were skittled out for 130 and last seen heading to the local McDonald's drive-thru. I mean, that is essentially gamesmanship, isn't it? I mean, they can say...
I think I've actually played at Taylor Merchants before.
That's the first class venue, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's one of their outgrounds, I think. Alex B. Hi, guys. Looking forward to seeing Mark steaming into bowl soon. Last season, I started playing for Copmanthorpe CC after a few years away. The club love giving nicknames, and I was quickly christened Klaus on account of my round glasses, which make me look like a foreign exchange student. Every time I bowl a good ball, it's now accompanied by fielders with German accents shouting, "Ja, das ist gut." Here's a legendary story. This is from Walton the Dale Cricket Club. Sam Bolton, first 11 all-rounder, managed to convince two umpires and an opposition team that the rules surrounding handled ball had been changed in an early season fixture. He stopped a ball running onto his stumps with his hand and proceeded to tell everyone that this was now the only permissible use of the hand that was allowed. He got away with it and went on to get a match-winning 50. That sounds like very smart thinking. A non-legendary story.
His nickname should be Conman.
A non-legendary story. Chris Norton. I played at school until the age of about 14. I was asked to join a local Sunday club. 35 years later, I bought new gear. First game, I pinched nerves in both hands and pulled a hamstring, getting 15. Sold the stuff following day on eBay. Oh, that is... I certainly know how that feels. I once paid for a day's babysitting, two taxi journeys for a game in which I was out first ball whilst batting and then concussed whilst fielding. So I know what it is not to make it to the top ranks. A nickname story from regular correspondent Matt Tufts. Another great episode last week. I could have listened to you chat to Merv for hours. That's very kind of you. Firstly, nickname. After a series of ducks in our league matches in 2013, my surname Tufts had been written so frequently with a zero after it that my teammates have referred to me as Tufts so ever since. On to a legendary story from Ramsgate Corinthians CC. Mark Jaunty Lewis has never lived this moment down. Jaunty was given his nickname ironically after claiming midway through a season, "I may not get into the best 11 for my batting or bowling, but I should be in for my fielding." Needless to say, this is not the case. Jaunty was placed at long on during a tense finish in a league match some 10 years ago. The opposition batsman on strike was flaying the ball to all parts and was ensuring his side reached their target in a close encounter. With just five required from the final over, we managed to bowl two dot balls in a row and add some pressure. He then had an almighty swing at the third ball, hitting it high and far, but not quite far enough. Jaunty, at long on, took a few paces in and had the chance to be a hero. He steadied himself, eyes fixated on the falling cherry, and that was it. It burst through his fingers, crashing into his forehead. The ball bounced so far off his head that it went for six. And we'd left... We'd lost the game while Jaunty was left lying flat out cold on the turf. At that moment, it didn't matter. We were all too busy rolling around in fits of laughter to care about the result, or poor Jaunty, who we were pleased to say went on to make a full recovery.
That reminds me of Ashton, my home club. We had this guy called the Caterer. Partly guesses of what he used to do at the club. But you play for the third team, and he didn't really have anything to do with cricket. I don't know much about it, but... he played when we were short and helped out, and we played against the posh team, South Northumberland, third 11. The needs, I think it was five to win last ball. So if it goes for four, I think we still would have won. I think they needed five or more to win. And as the ball gets hit in the deep to him, he comes running after the ball, and instead of just let the ball bounce and go for four. He tried to kick it. Went for six. And we lost by one.
That is the manner, exactly the manner in which I myself was concussed, was fielding it long on Ella Jaunty. I have to say, I had a seam mark on my forehead for about a week. It was slightly terrifying at the time. But I didn't realise... The other thing was I just sort of carried on. I didn't realise I was concussed.
When you had the seam mark on your head, did you look a bit like a pirate?
I guess, yeah. And because I had a proper black eye as well, with like one of those ones that was like a slow one. So it had, so every day you look at it and it would be different
colours. Do you think maybe people thought you'd like just getting out of prison, or like you were maybe like part of a gang?
Yeah, well, I get that a lot, actually.
You'd been branded.
Yeah. I thought maybe it was my tell. Perhaps when I'm telling a fib, I sort of bruise heavily around the eyes. Okay, we've got another late contender from the mailbag. This is from Jonathan Whiteman. This is a great tale that was brought back to my attention while watching the World Cup final and realising that the players, and arguably the umpires on that occasion, seldom understand the intricacies of the rules of cricket outside of the most basic. A summer's day a number of years ago at Bolden Cricket Club in the North East was the scene for a truly hilarious and bonkers cricketing moment. The Bolden batsman, Richard Potter, attempted to play a sweep shot that took the top edge and lodged the ball in between the peak and the grid of his helmet. The opposing wicketkeeper, understanding the rules of cricket more than most present that day, shouted in jest, "Catch it!" Richard, failing to recognise the humorous tone of the comment, panicked briefly and stepped away from the keeper urgently. This is when he got himself in a bit of a pickle. Not realising that the ball was dead, he considered that if he was to use his hand to retrieve the ball from the helmet, then he might be given out-handled ball. The situation was exacerbated when, like the batsman, the fielder at extra cover took the words of the wicketkeeper seriously and sensed an opportunity to claim a wicket by catching the ball straight out of the helmet. The fielder started running towards the batsman. And either through an incredibly fast thought process or sheer blind panic, the batsman started to leg it off towards far leg while extra cover gave chase. The fielder, who was fielding at long leg, seeing what was unfolding before him, attempted to cut the batsman off, and with no one else to turn and both long leg and extra cover bearing down on him, the batsman played his final roll of the dice by which to preserve his wicket. He dove full length and started bashing his head on the floor to try and ground the ball. The truly crazy 20 seconds caused by a patchy knowledge of the rule and one man's desperation not to be given out.
That's world class. That is literally world class. Those are
fantastic scenes. Thank you very much indeed, Jonathan Whiteman, and indeed everyone who has sent us messages over the course of this series. Right, Mark Wood, it's time for a guest.
Ooh.
Do you want me to give you a few clues as to who it is?
Yeah, I've, because it's my birthday, I'm feeling sprightly. I think that I might know this one quickly. I'm feeling on top of it. Come on, hit me.
Okay, a couple of clues. He's probably got a new bat sponsor.
Johnny Bairstow, knew it.
Oh, very quick out of the blocks there. It is. It's Johnny Bairstow. I'd just like to take a moment to thank our sponsors who have helped make this podcast possible. Cricketers Gin is the perfect pairing for tonic, but also this podcast, as they also believe in creating something enjoyable around the sport we love. Cricketers is an exquisite local gin, a family business, and was inspired during a game of cricket on a sunny village green in Pinckneys, Berkshire. The founders decided that the quintessential British game, along with the wild botanicals growing in abundance nearby, deserved a bespoke artisan gin of its own. Cricketers is distilled to the highest London gin standards. All the ingredients are natural and added before distillation, ensuring it's the purest form of gin, and that Cricketers delivers a beautifully smooth, juniper-forward gin. You can find this wonderful cricketing tipple at cricketersgin.com, and we thank them for their support. There is a special 10% discount if you use the code POD.
William Hill's safer gambling tools help you stay in control. You can set deposit limits, session reminders, and take timeouts whenever you need them. 18 plus. Please gamble responsibly. William Hill, it's who you play with.
What a brilliant, brilliant 100 from a brilliant cricketer. Johnny Bairstow, take a bow.
Well, he's northern, he's bearded, he's a World Cup winner, he's muscular. Am I describing Mark Wood? Nearly. It's Johnny Bairstow. Hello, Johnny.
I'm Miles, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I've had a morning of homeschooling. And I've gone absolutely spare for the last hour and a half straight through. So this is very relaxing.
Funny enough, Johnny's just homeschooled me in the nets earlier today. So technically, Johnny's been doing a little bit as well.
Were you? Was he bowling or batting?
At both. I've been homeschooled on all fronts today. Now he's looking in good touch, Johnny. I think he's ready to go, aren't you, son?
Yeah, pretty happy. A little bit nervous naturally, but no, happy with my game. Just need to just give myself a bit of a chance. Hopefully, when we get out there, and I hopefully get the nod.
At the moment like this, then you've gone from playing suddenly. You're playing. I say suddenly. It's been ages. You're playing red ball, but what that mindset then? How do you go about mentally sorting yourself out? If you've gone from that sort of cricket where you're wearing, I don't know, multicoloured pads and you're just sort of spanking it daft, how do you suddenly get into that mindset when you think, I've got to be gritty for 90 overs?
I think you've got to call on a lot of the times in the past. I've been fortunate enough to play quite a few times in tests now for England, so calling on those times that you may have had a break in the past, also times when Woody's been coming around the wicket at Scarborough and trying to hit me on the head, and all those other experiences that you've had. To be honest, I think that you try and,
well, of course, Gaul and Scarborough. You've got the fort at Gaul. You've got the castle at Scarborough. They're two very similar environments, aren't they? It's not hard to sort of transpose one mindset to the other.
Yeah, the weather's definitely very similar, as you say. It's close.
I think last time we were here, actually, Johnny, you played a blinder, didn't you? So that must give you confidence as well.
Yeah, that was up in Colombo, but yeah, in Sri Lanka. Yeah, that's always tricky because I did my ankle before the first game. I did my ligaments in my ankle, and then I was meant to, the doctor and the phys said I probably should be out for 6 weeks, but I managed to convince them to just trust me that I can get back in a lot less time. I end up getting back in 3 weeks to be back.
See, that's a true northerner there for you, Miles.
Wow.
See that? Back in three.
That's extraordinary. Can you teach Mark to persuade physios that he's fit again sooner?
I keep giving him a cup of cement at breakfast just to see if that'll harden him up a bit.
Because that innings was amazing. That was that big 100, was that batting at three in Sri Lanka?
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah, so one of the first times that I batted at three for England, yeah.
That is, to just sort of drop in like that is incredible. And also what I feel, and this is where I feel slightly kindred spirit, is the thought of, what should we say, fair gentlemen like you and I who redden easily.
Those gingers, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Our inability, you know, the heat. I mean, I think watching cricket when it's hot is quite hard work. But the thought of going out there in the middle and batting for, what, 120 overs?
I'm calling it modern-day torture, Miles.
Yeah.
How about we just put a ginger bloke in 40 degrees heat, also 80% humidity, and just see how he goes. Prior to a couple of other tours in the subcontinent, I'd do my training and go sit in a sauna for 20 minutes and then go out and have a couple of minutes outside and then go and try and sit in it again for as long as possible. Obviously, try not to pass out and drinking some water during the event, but no one was harmed in the...
Would you do a bit of sort of Steve Smith-style shadow batting in the sauna just to check it's all moving properly?
I can't say that's my go-to.
What you just said there, Miles, about Sri Lanka and obviously Johnny doing well here last time. Johnny, from obviously I'm in the room with you when we do all the analysis of bowlers and batsmen and their bowlers and their batsmen, but what does it take to be successful in Sri Lanka apart from, because obviously you've done it before and we've seen you do it before, but what is it for you that makes people successful out here?
Confidence, that's number one. Having confidence in your defence, whether that be against spin and just knowing your game plans against relevant spin. They're allowed to bowl good balls. They're allowed to bowl balls in areas that may react differently off the pitch. But if you're giving yourself your best chance to react to them and play in the best way possible, then that's number one. Trying to do your research a little bit on if they've got any mystery with them. They've got a leg spinner this time. And we know that his average pace of his leg spinner is 51 mile an hour compared to 53 with his googly. So straight away you're thinking that the trajectory of that is going to be flatter than his leg spinner, so you're potentially looking out for subtle changes like that.
And what's he called, Johnny?
I'll let you pronounce it. No chance.
I don't think we've got any chance, have we?
No, actually, I tell you what you should do. You should let Miles try and google it and pronounce it at the end of the show.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, though.
I can just about get away with speaking so quickly that no one actually, you know, it's totally inaudible.
So but you'd think that everyone in world cricket, you know, Miles, would know who Johnny Bairstow is. I certainly thought everybody would know who Johnny Bairstow is, yet some little Sri Lankan guy in the last hotel asked for Mr. Ben's autograph. That would be Ben Stokes, wouldn't it, Johnny?
Or was it Mr. Ben from the animation series? Mr. Ben closed the door to the Emporium.
It could have been worse. It could have been Ron Weasley.
Very
good.
Did you sign
your correct name?
He wrote Stokesy in with his left hand and child's writing just to make he scribed it into a bat. Ben.
That business, therefore, when you're talking about just how different then the pace that someone bowls at, are you reading that then from their arm action or is it out of the hand? Just to think if already the idea that you've got in your head, you're going out to bat with the knowledge that one particular delivery is 2 miles an hour quicker than another delivery. Is that sort of stuff clouding your head or is it all there at the forefront just sort of by instinct?
No, I don't think it's clouding it. I think that the more clarity that you can have with that information, the better. But having the knowledge that there's a bloke that's potentially got the ability to do something different from his stock ball is the important bit. Now the trick is trying to pick it out of his hand, and then if you can't pick it out of his hand, then trying to pick it in the air. And if you don't pick it out of his hand or in the air, then trying to pick it off the pitch. And if you don't pick it off the pitch, then good luck because you're screwed, so sweep
it. Yeah, but it does sound like you've got four goes at it. You can afford to be wrong three times. Yeah.
And if you get all four wrong, you walk back. See ya.
It's not just the fact that, you know, he's not going to be just working it out on the field. He's played with mystery spinners. He's played against mystery spinners a lot and been successful. So, like he says, with the confidence side of things, I think it's the same as a bowler. You get the confidence from working things out, working batters out, being adaptable on the field quickly. And I'm sure experiences like that in the IPL have helped you, haven't they, Johnny? I mean, we'll talk about cricket experiences first before the cake experiences where you get mushed in the face first there. What's your cricket experiences in the IPL like?
Mate, I think you're right, but another experience is obviously growing up with Adil Rashid at Yorkshire. I think the experiences that Rash and I have had growing up together and trying to pick him, whether that be keeping or batting against him in the nets, is another one to add to that. We're very fortunate to have someone like Adil that has played all formats for England, and that can only stand you, like I said, in good stead for when you go to play in places like the IPL.
What's the cake business? Why did you get attacked with cake in the IPL? Is that a sort of hazing ritual?
Miles, this is not one of the highlights of the trip, I'm not going to lie to you. It might be for Mark's amusement, but definitely not for me. So, if it's your birthday when you're in the IPL, which fortunately it isn't, then to celebrate your birthday, you go and celebrate with everyone. But there's a cake, there's a birthday cake. The birthday cake, obviously, is in the middle. You cut the cake, you hand a little piece to someone, you have a bite yourself. And then all of a sudden, the rest of your teammates come in, take a handful of cake and smother it in your face. It's literally like you get smothered in your face, you get smothered in your hair, you get smothered, people put it in your ears. Like, it's absolutely atrocious. And then if it also happens if you get man of the match. Now, when I was in Hyderabad last year, I was fortunate enough to get man of the match.
I feel like you're going to say, I deliberately get out because I don't want that man of the match. Yeah.
I want to be the second best player in every game I play.
And then we went back to the hotel and all my family, and some friends are there. And they didn't have a clue about what was happening. And we've got back to the hotel and everyone's like singing, chanting, everything like this. Next thing, I'm stood at the front and they're going, what the heck is going on here? And then my sister looks over and she turns around, looks back, and I'm just covered in cake, literally covered in cake. So I've gone to then give her a hug. And she just started running off. It takes about 15 minutes to get my hair back to being ginger. It's the first time I've been like brown haired in my life.
It sounds like a sort of arty French film. People just sort of sexually smearing cooking ingredients all over each other.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, noted. You're actually cooking, Johnny. Obviously, Mark and I do huge amounts of research before all of our in-depth interviews. It's not just us, it's the whole team. And I looked on your Instagram feed and there was a picture of you, November, I think it was, cooking for your sister's birthday, I think it was. It looked like a sort of beef Wellington, something like that.
Oh, that yeah. was tremendous. That looked tremendous.
Do you, and this is what everyone's been writing in, do you make your own pastry, Johnny?
No. That's the honest answer. Sorry to disappoint everyone that's listening. No, I didn't. There was pastry sheets that were involved, but the mushroom pate that went inside was homemade and other bits like that. So
I've just watched the Jack Charlton DVD. Obviously, Jack Charlton being from Ashington, I thought, oh, I'll give this a try. Loved it. And halfway through, there's a bit on the Irish football manager, Jack Charlton, Irish football manager at the time, and David O'Leary not getting as many games as he wanted because Jack Charlton didn't rate him. And it brought back all these memories to when I went to Johnny's house. Johnny's car gets flagged down as we're driving in. I'm like, oh, what's going on here? Oh, Johnny, great to see you. We must play golf. We must do this. It's David O'Leary. And I get to Johnny's house. I was like, oh, how long have you known David O'Leary? Oh, never before. I've just met him just now. He charged after Johnny's car.
Do you get starstruck then? I mean, Mark, obviously you're very... Do you find, within the world of cricket, presumably you can't get starstruck, but suddenly when you're sort of flung into these situations?
Well, we've got Jack Callis here at the minute, and I mean, I tried to break the ice by prank calling his room, which didn't go down well.
Why did you prank call Jack Callis?
I just thought we'd break the ice. I mean, we had to have...
Because he was very bored.
Yeah, we had to have 4 or 5 days in... You could talk. We had 4 or 5 days in quarantine, and we couldn't do anything. So at the time, we didn't have any laundry service, so I was trying to ring up with a Sri Lankan accent saying, would you like your evening meal, which was being delivered? And everybody would go, yes, yes, your evening meal. And I'd say, and laundry? And they'd go, no, no, we haven't got any laundry. So I'd be like, so you don't want your evening meal and you don't want your laundry? No, no, we do want that. All right, so you want your laundry, did it? And then that's when it would kick off. I was a few, my top three most angry were Stuart Broad in his poshest accent, who couldn't quite understand why I wasn't getting it right. John Lewis, the bowling coach, who didn't even get as far as the laundry because he was that upset that his food was cold, that he just kept shouting at me, effing cold. It's effing cold, over and over. And then I had to give up with him. And then the last one was Chris Wokes, who just hung up the phone. So I thought we'd break the ice with Callis. I'll ring him. We'll get on good terms. He'll have a bit of a laugh. He's the coolest man alive. He just didn't break. I couldn't break him. And then in the end, I had to say, sorry, mate, it's Woody. And he went, yeah, I thought it might have been somebody. And that was it. Hung up the phone. Job done. Couldn't break. He's unbreakable. It's like he's slip catching.
Is John Lewis back on speaking terms with you?
Yeah, but he's not speaking to those hotel staff. They better get his meals warm or he's not going to speak to anybody ever again.
He looks quiet, doesn't he? But you forget John Lewis. First of all, he was one of the first bowlers to rip the Australians apart in 2005. In that 2020 when he and Gough skittled them for, what was it, 77. I was in Dubai once and he tried to throw me off the back of a golf buggy.
Well, my son's watching Postman Pat at the minute. It's one of his favourite shows. So we've constantly got special delivery service playing and I cannot help but see Postman Pat and Johnny Lou. I think it's the human version of Postman Pat. And the second thing is, which Johnny will know, we've got obviously the illustrious swim club. And Johnny Lou's new to that. Johnny Bairstow, of course, is in that as well. And Johnny Lou in swim club is an absolute madman. He tries to thrash through the water like a great white shark. So he's a bit hot-headed at the minute. It might be the temperature. We might need to just cool him off a little bit.
Well, you've got to work. You've got to get somehow. I mean, you can't cope with an angry bowling coach.
Mate, if I don't hit the top of off, I don't know what's going to happen.
Have you been pranked by Woody... Johnny, has he rang up in a dubious accent offering a sort of turn down service?
Nah, chickened out.
Johnny's too busy. For anyone that didn't see, Johnny's training regime. So, any normal guy, it was a few squats in that room or a couple of press ups. Johnny was shoulder pressing his table on the balcony. It's like something off a Rocky IV film.
I met you once, Johnny. I don't know, you probably don't remember a Wisden cricket dinner, and you would have been there with Duncan Hamilton. I think it was when did you guys win the Book of the Year? And I was,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
I was doing the after dinner speech, which is an absolutely terrifying evening actually, because it's just a room full of heroes. But I remember at the time thinking of you. You were in that seat whereby you were. Yeah, there was lots of, sort of legends in the room. There were your Michael Athertons and your Victor Marks, but I was like sat at a table of my sort of Surrey heroes from the 90s. It was all Thorpe and Stewart and Salisbury and stuff. But you were in that sort of pressure. You were kind of there representing contemporary England, I guess. You were the one, you'd just come back from tour or what have you. And I remember thinking in that sort of environment, is there, even though they're all people that have done the same thing as you, is it quite sort of pressured when you're sort of on display like that? And your job is, the job is to turn up in a suit and just sort of be there. But then you've got to kind of weather that for the evening, haven't you? And it's the sort of thing where, I don't know, people will be referring to you from the lectern and that kind of stuff. And I wondered if that was an environment in which you can enjoy, or is it just, does it just feel like work that you can't influence?
I think in rooms like that, you've got to kind of gauge it as to how people are within the room. Because if people are there having a good time and wanting you to be having a good time and everything like that, then... naturally, you can be a bit more relaxed about it. If it's quite a serious environment and people are taking it very seriously and not necessarily laughing at some people's jokes when they're meant to be laughing and everything else, then you've got to take it in a different way. But to be honest with you, like, I just try and enjoy those evenings because it's quite rare that you get the opportunity to go and enjoy evenings like that, to be really honest with you. I mean, how many times in your life are you going to be able to say that you've been to a dinner in the long room, for instance? So I think those evenings are there to be cherished. Yes, we're wearing an England suit, a suit we're representing England, but people want to see you as well as you playing cricket. They want to understand you as a person, as a personality, and everything that goes with it. And I think those evenings are very important for that, because if you don't give any personality or insight into you as yourself, all those people are ever going to see is the Mark Wood, Johnny Best that's on a cricket pitch.
And I suppose that kind of just that having that is part of what you do, isn't it? Having that kind of ambassadorial thing. You just, there's moments that you just, there's like a switch is flicked and suddenly you're kind of, you're on display, aren't you? I don't know what it, you know, if you're going and doing sort of street cricket or whatever it is.
Yeah, and like I said, I think it's very easy for people to have a perception on individuals at this moment in time with social media, whatever. People can put whatever they want on social media to try and make people believe that they're happy, sad, everything. But the emotions that may be going around inside, I'm sure that there'll be plenty of people that listen to this that will be going through ups, downs with the current circumstances. And that's not dissimilar to us, even though we're in Sri Lanka, we're not allowed out of our houses. We're not allowed out of our hotel and everything like that. We're literally going to the ground and back. And what I'm trying to say is the pressures that come with that, yes, are huge. Yes, we're very lucky to do it, but we're all going through similar bits. And through social media, you're able to potentially have preconceived ideas as to an individual, as to their current circumstances, past circumstances that may not be correct. So understanding and learning their actual circumstance, I think, is really important.
It's also just that the idea that you can be accessible to people that love the game and whatever, and have a degree of, you know, normalcy about you or whatever. I think that's really just really great in terms of people being able to get involved and feel involved.
Like I've mentioned to you before, the dressing room is very much like any club dressing room, which is, I know you might think it's hard to believe, but you have the same dynamics in the England dressing room as what you would in a club dressing room. And, you know, me and Johnny have played against each other since we must have been 10 or 11 year old. So we've grown up together, know each other inside out. And I feel like if people were to get to know me or Johnny, we've obviously known each other a long time, but Johnny's the same lad when we've grown up. And I hope I am as well, that you continued on this path, and whether you're playing for Ashington, Northumberland, Yorkshire, Donington, whoever we're playing for, we're the same kids that we grew up and the same background, everything like that. And I think you've got to be, people want to see you vulnerabilities, they want to know that you're approachable, they want to know your professionalism, that there's loads of sides to your personality that people want to get to know. And I think the more you can be not media trained, and as long as you're just honest in yourself, I think people can interact with that, and they can get a sense of sort of normality with it all.
I think that's why it was so great that you paired up with Duncan Hamilton, Johnny. I'm just a very big, I love that book, but I'm a very big admirer as well of Duncan Hamilton. And I just think it turned it into a proper read. You know, it's not a kind of, it wasn't like a typical sports book and stuff. And I think, what was it like working with Duncan? If I can be serious for a moment, his Neville Carter's book, if anyone's listening, is really amazing. He's an astonishing writer.
Yeah, Duncan's amazing. Duncan really is. He's a fascinating bloke, isn't he? And a seriously special writer. I mean, his knowledge of the game, the research that he put into certain bits, and how he was able to put it across, I think was really special. Because naturally talking about those kind of things is very personal, and the empathy that he put it across, but also how he put it across, and he put it across in the right way. I think that's the biggest thing.
But also, and the sporting aspects of it as well. You know, just being able to. That's the thing I think about again. That being able, the access. You describing what it's like being out in the middle, say in South Africa, scoring 150 or whatever, and you really do feel. There's those books I think that can sort of transport you there as a fan, and you really get an understanding of what it's like. I remember once being at a thing at Lord's, and my mate and I, I don't know if we were allowed to, but we walked out into the middle with David Gower at about 12:30, slightly drunk, and he explained what it's like batting at Lord's. And my mate I was with just stood there with this look on his face going, I can't... Afterwards, he said, I couldn't really listen to that. I was just thinking, how amazing is this? And I was going, oh, you should have listened. It was really interesting, and it's Iron Flesh. What was Mark Wood like as a 10-year-old? Was he different in any way?
Small. He still is now. Woody is a 10-year-old, so we've got quite a few good memories. Like, so we played against each other a few times, once at Dunnington, and Yorkshire always used to bat first.
You had to bat first.
And I'll never forget when he was stood at, he was captain and changed the field. Was this at Longhurst Hall?
Well, it was like the in position at the time, wasn't it? You watched the England cricket team, and they have like these silly mid-ons, and they have these short mid-wickets or short mid-ons. Johnny is milking my off-spinner, who was actually a good off-spinner, Tom Cant, and he's milking down the ground. I'm thinking, right, he might just pop one up to me here. So I'll bring mid-on wider and make him into like a wide long-on, and I'll stand at it like a short mid-on, and hopefully he could just chip one up to his. So as a kid as well, yeah, you've got this like sort of air of confidence about you, haven't you, where you're like, you'll talk it up, and I'll be like, right, come on, Canty, this is the one, he's going to chip it straight to me here. And I think in typical Johnny fashion, just to deliberately pee me off, he hit this ball as hard as he could past me at short mid-on, that I could hear the rrr of the ball as it went past my head for four. To which I turned around to the spinner and said, I think I'll come back to mid-wicket. Johnny was stood there laughing because he'd done it deliberately to try and make me scared, and it had succeeded within one ball.
I think a crucial part of that anecdote that could have been easy to miss was you being captain, Mark.
Yeah, well...
How long did your captaincy reign last?
I went right through, actually, from under-11s to under-17s. The most damning stat about the whole thing is that we never won a game. So that probably tells you more about my captaincy than anything else.
There's definitely another story as we were growing up. So as you can imagine, Woody was quite small when we were growing up, and he used to bowl his away swinger, and would be batting, and then all of a sudden he'd try and bowl this in swinger, except when he jumped and like he's got his normal action. Instead of jumping and keeping his left shoulder tight, he'd jump and his left arm would literally go towards like point. And then he'd open right up to try and get this in-swinger going. And then he'd run through and just smile at me as if to say, did you pick it? And then as time went on, we were having this joke and everything like that. And there was one winter where we came back into pre-season. I think you were about 19, weren't you, Woody?
Yeah.
And it obviously had this like growth spurt and got strong. And next thing, we're up at Durham on a pre-season game. And I was like, I was just minding my own business in like having a few warm-ups. And I heard this absolute thud on the back net. And I looked across and it was Woody. I was like, hang on a minute. That sounds pretty quick. Where's this come from? The next thing, I've just out of the corner of my eye, just told the coach just to stop and wait and listen. So I wanted to see if he was actually bowling quick or whether someone had just turned around and hit a ball into the back of the net just to try and scare a few of the lads. But no, unbeknown to us, Woody had put on about 10 miles an hour in the space of 4 months. And everyone was absolutely dropping the shopping about facing him in the next season.
Is that when you went? That's when you went from being Bruce Banner to being the Hulk, essentially, Mark, just in that four-month period.
Yeah, I was just saying it's all the beef Wellingtons I had, obviously, around that time with the homemade pastry. But no, it was weird. It was a bit like that. It was, like Johnny says, it was like one year I'd gone from a little swinger to the next year I got bowled quick. And, you know, me and Johnny had some battles over the years, as I'm sure people listening, you know, local leagues or you have people in your own team who you compete against, and I can safely say I could never get Johnny out. There was a guy called Spike and a guy called Johnny, obviously Johnny Bairstow at the time, Spike, Chris Marsden was his name, Johnny?
Chris Marsden, yeah.
That's him. And if them two got in, we might as well have just flown a white flag. I've been for 8 years. I got to see these two back to the point where I thought I've had enough. Like literally, I've seen you bad enough. We give up. Like honestly, just let someone else have a go.
But you must have. You didn't get him out once in 8 years.
No, not once. The first time we played together, England and North of England under 17s, and Johnny got a cracking 90-odd against I think the South. And it was at that point I'd always knew Johnny was a good player, but when you're scoring hundreds against Northumberland, it's good. But we'd seen plenty of them, if you know what I mean, the other teams. But when he was the only one to get runs that game, and I think he went on to represent England. Under 17s at that point, Johnny. But that was when I thought, this bloke will definitely play for England.
Did you have the same confidence in Mark, Johnny?
No, absolutely not. Did he get this guy off? Who's this lad? Look at the way he balls this in swinger. Oh, get him off!
Well, I never played England 19s, and neither did you. Did you?
No.
So there's similarities with that because like everyone. Well, you hear of a lot of stories, don't you, about wanting to play in the 19s and everything like that. And I was never really on any like pathway stuff. I went down to Loughborough a few times and did a few bits here and there, but never played England 15s. I played one game in the 17s and then didn't play under 19s. And obviously when you're growing up, everything's about trying to get into the under 19s, trying to get into the World Cup squad, everything like that. But I think like, someone like Woody epitomises that it's not just about that because everyone grows at different stages, everyone blossoms at different stages, and to go on and come back from the injuries that he's had and the tough times and actually look at himself in the mirror and go, is it something that I really want to do? Can I get through my ankle again? Can I get through another ankle operation? Can I get through the rehab and do I want to put myself through it? I think that's a real testament to Woody as a bloke and a character, and such a focal point in our side in all three formats of the game, and you know, to be there out sharing the field with him during the Ashes and also in the World Cup, to look back and think about those times that he's spoken about up at Longhurst Hall at Dunnington, up on a cold March morning up at the riverside when you're hoping you don't nip one back and get one on the inside thigh and then you're hopping around for 10 minutes. It's really quite special, Miles.
I think it's very lovely to hear, I think, people earnestly praising each other in this way. And I suppose it's partly that thing of you having this, what you achieved, say, in the summer of 2019, that's a thing you will always have.
It's nice to look back, isn't it, on the memories that me and Johnny are talking about there. And I think that, I mean, it's not finished yet, but if you think of the end point or the top of the mountain being winning a World Cup, it's nice to think of where we've grown up and where we've played cricket and the local cricket clubs and playing against each other to eventually ending up on that field at Lord's together. I mean, the thing that I hope people notice or they might not notice is that every World Cup game, it was me, Johnny and Rudy who stood together for the national anthem. Because we were the three that felt that we belted it the most, didn't we, Johnny? And we'd often try and out-sing each other. Or...
I think what's exciting about it as well is that there's more. Do you know what I mean? You've got to where you are and you've done that. But there's also, here you are now, however many months it is, 17, 18 months later. Yes, you're confined to barracks, as it were, but you're about to go out and just do more stuff together. And that's, you know, the idea that one day that will just be, you know, just one of the staging posts.
Yeah, absolutely. And having the sight to look forward to, obviously, Sri Lanka first, then hopefully to have the opportunity to go to India and potentially win again in India is a huge bit. But then from a white ball point of view, the building blocks that we're able to put in place is three World Cups in 3 years that we've got. And I genuinely think we're in with a shout with them because the squad that we've got is a very, very special squad. And whether that be in T20 or one-day cricket, there's more guys that are coming through that are going to be pushing us, and hopefully that standard keeps going up. Hopefully our stocks keep going up. And that, if you can't be excited about the next 3 years of international cricket, I know we're talking about a long period of time there and injuries and form, everything like that, but it's still pretty special.
Yeah.
Are you hoping to be a part of it, Miles?
Am I going to be? Yeah,
if you get that action sorted.
Yeah, I think I'm probably just going to change the length of my run-up again. I reckon that's all it is. It's just, there's just one little thing. I might try batting left-handed, something. I'm just going to make a little change to my game.
I think it's time to do the Johnny Best or Super Rubber Miles.
I could not agree more, Mark.
Do you think that you could maybe have 90 seconds on the clock ready and waiting?
I'm nervous.
I've got the old Fitbit ready. It's already had an exhausting day. Here we are.
Are we ready?
So it's about 80, 90 seconds. It changes because some people finish early.
I'm nervous.
Life's like that, isn't it? Don't think, just speak. Those are the rules. On your marks, get set, go.
Right, Johnny, what is your favourite drink?
Yorkshire tea.
What is your favourite music band?
Mumford & Sons.
Ooh, any superstitions?
No.
What was your favourite school lesson?
Geography.
Would you rather whistle, clap, click, or hum?
Whistle.
Who would be your worst roommate? Careful.
Jack Brooks.
What is your guilty pleasure?
McVitie's chocolate digestives.
Great choice. Your favourite childhood toy?
I had a massive teddy that was about 4 foot tall. He was ginger like me.
Would you rather have a hot bath or a cold shower?
Definitely a hot bath.
Name two types of trouser.
Jeans and chinos.
Nice. And your favourite TV owl?
Is this a trick question?
Nope. You can pass.
Pass.
By the barest of all margins. Miles, how did he do?
That took 84 seconds. I've made that number up because of the technical problems, but in the edit it will be 84 seconds, I reckon. I've thought of a TV owl.
Come on, then.
Old Brown from The Adventures of Peter Rabbit.
Oh, yes. Old Brown. Not a nice character. Not a nice owl, him.
No, well, you set the bar pretty high, Mark.
I think the thing that stands out for me there, Miles, is favourite childhood toy, the teddy bear that was also ginger.
Yorkshire tea was very on brand. Very on brand.
I don't know why Johnny would like that.
I think it's like those people that have a Newbury but put Kookaburra stickers on it. It's like, so he gets a Yorkshire tea caddy and fills it with Twinings.
Geography was the favourite school lesson, Miles.
Good. Impressive. Helpful for an international career.
Well, I feel like now whenever we're going to venture out of the hotel again, I obviously need Johnny by my side because he'd know everywhere. He knows every capital. He knows every street.
Never mind Tom, it's John.
Very good.
Well, that was Johnny Bairstow there, your World Cup winning colleague. Do you know what? I think he has a great amount of respect for you, Mark.
Yes. I think obviously going through everything, similar paths together. Johnny's got a heart of gold and literally he's one of them in the dressing room who will, you know, when things are either personally or the team is up against it, he really does deliver. And he's always looking out for other people and he always tries to help. And sometimes, you know, it can come across on the TV like he's always up for a fight or a scrap with something.
But he doesn't seem like that at all.
In the dressing room, he's very chilled, will help, loves to help out, wants to be caring. Like I say, he has got a heart of gold and is a good friend of mine.
I sort of wish I'd asked. There's so much to talk about with someone like that's done so much and has such a range of experiences. That in that World Cup campaign, that moment when he sort of just turned it around and he was getting a bit of stick, I suppose, but also the team as a whole was, and suddenly he hit that like that 90, 111, 109, just that thing. And when Josh Butler was talking about it, that moment when you had a team meeting and said, what are you going to do? And just sitting on the balcony thinking, they're doing that thing that we said we should do.
If you look at his record for a one-day opener, it's literally phenomenal, him and Jace together.
But we're also talking about someone that's played 70 tests as well. I mean, he's not...
He's not just a white ball cricketer, is he?
And Nelly broke, I think he broke the record for a wicket keeping in a year. So he's very experienced and he's a good team man. I mean, the amount of times Johnny will get out trying to whack it with the tail and things like that, he's very unselfish like that, which, you know, a lot of people will look at stats and things like that. But like I say, like I've said before, sometimes stats are a bit deceiving because he does put the team first a lot of the time.
Yeah. I would recommend to people listening is the book he did with Duncan Hamilton. I think it's called Under a Blue Sky.
What would your, if you were being brutally honest or truthful, how does your perception of Johnny when you look at him on the TV and now you've just interviewed him, was it very different to what you thought or similar? Or
I kind of thought he'd be less antsy about my interior decor. And I've always thought that. So that's another dream shattered. I suppose you get that sense. I suppose he's one of those people that maybe looks angry in photographs. Just has a very kind of calm and measured and sort of thoughtful outlook. And I didn't think he'd be the opposite of that. But he's just sort of nice and gentle and thoughtful, isn't he? But I also think, you know, when we talk to these people, we're not talking to young hopefuls, are we? We're talking to people that have really done stuff. And I guess there's a certain assuredness that comes with that. But, he's, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the great, great England players of the modern era.
And he helped save Hogwarts, so that's another positive.
I was amazed to hear about how bad you were at concealing your in-swinger. You're like that, yeah, that baddie in Casino Royale whose eye bleeds when he's bluffing.
Yeah, that's my tell. it's less of a tell, hopefully, now. But back then, Johnny was certainly right. I used to think that it was very deceiving, as then Johnny would smile halfway down as the ball was coming down, as if he knew what I was bowling. I was thinking, how does he know what I'm bowling? And then when he described it and he showed me, I thought, yeah, it is a bit obvious.
I love the thought, though. It's an insight into your captaincy style. Not only do you think, I'm going to stick someone at silly mid-on when Johnny Bairstow's batting, but you think, I'm going to stick myself there.
Well, I thought lead from the front, you know, show an example of the lads. And I mean, at the time, I remember when I moved position again, I remember thinking, the lads are going to think I'm weak now. But honestly, the ball went past me so quick. I mean, he was like, well, like 13, 14-year-old, and he hit the bloke like he hit the ball like a bloke.
Quite strong. So,
he's got the ginger strength, hasn't he?
Thank you very much indeed for listening to this episode, and indeed any others you might have listened to of this, the first series of A Middle Please Umpire, with me, Miles Jupp, and World Cup winning fast bowler Mark Wood. We will be back, as I say, in the spring.
Yes, day one is over. Lunchtime. Good first session, Miles. I think we've done well. I think we're on top. But of course, there's more work to do in the second session or our second series. For everyone that's listened in, thank you very much. We do read the comments and the reviews. So if you could leave more, that would be great on all our feeds and pages. And we look forward to seeing you in the spring.
Oh, should be taken and is taken. Brilliant from Mark Wood. What a spell this has been.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and email us at middleplease@hotmail.com. Please also leave a review if you've enjoyed it. Thanks to Mark and everyone behind the scenes, including Cricketer's Gin. Middle Please Umpire is an Electric production in association with Playback Media.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.